You are listening to a Wyatt Phosphorus Pictures podcast.
Broadcasting under the night sky from the edge of an undisclosed jungle on the Gulf of Mexico, I'm Christopher Garitano, your voice in the night. For the next hour, allow me to be your guide into the bizarre unknown, the fantastic macabre, and together we'll journey to that borderland between fiction and reality, a place beyond all rational explanation. We are now off to the witch.
In 1980, Claire Rudnicki, her husband Mark, and two friends were driving on Archer Avenue along the front of Resurrection Cemetery.
I was just looking out the window as we were going down the street, and on the right-hand side of the road, there was a girl walking.
Look ahead. Look, it's a girl.
She was bright, very bright, like illuminating. She was just walking very slow. I remember thinking, oh my God, it's Resurrection Mary, and I can feel my stomach starting to turn.
Let's go back.
No.
I was very frightened, I have to admit, it did scare me.
That was from a 1994 episode of the mighty Unsolved Mysteries TV series. It told a tale of several encounters with a lonely specter that roamed the cemetery and even seemed to manifest as not only an apparition, but also in the flesh. Throughout human history, people have sworn to have been encountered by spirits in limbo with unfinished business. Tonight's guests will share their own experience after this commercial break.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
You are listening to the Off to the Witch podcast, where we explore that bizarre borderline between fiction and reality and all subjects arcane. Journey over to my YouTube channel and subscribe now at youtube.com/@offtothewitch for a variety of extras and special features, including the Off to the Witch mini-docs with further insights on many of the latest episodes, as well as previews and behind the scenes of my forthcoming investigative series, Off to the Witch Presents, as well as the anniversary edition of my motion picture documentary, Montauk Chronicles. And follow us on social media. All links are available at linktree.com/Garitano7, GARETANO7. And stay tuned for more Off to the Witch.
Everyone loves a good ghost story, the thrill of a well-told tale. But when the story ends and you are alone, the images linger. You can sense them, hear them. You feel watched, followed, for there is no escape from your own imagination. Ghost Story. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome Welcome back to Off to the Witch. I'm your host, Christopher Garitano, and tonight's guests have appeared on Off to the Witch before, telling various encounters with the unknown. You can look through the catalog for episode number 28 for more with Dave and Jenny. But tonight is specifically regarding an encounter that we had while filming scenes for the first Off to the Witch Presents documentary, A Haunting We Will Go. So here's my interview with Dave Spinks and Jenny Serenity. Okay, so we were at a cemetery. I really wanted to discuss burial grounds, sacred ground. And I feel like through story and folklore, most of sacred ground is only regarded as tribal or ancient burial ground. But what about cemeteries? And I feel like that's just as sacred. It's why do we not lend the peace and respect that we have for these preserved grounds of tribes and other cultures around the world to just simple cemeteries? Do you feel that a cemetery or a graveyard is just as sacred as any tribal burial ground?
Yeah, I absolutely do, because that's all of our loved ones' final resting place. At the same time, I'm a firm believer in, you know, we talk about what our soul is, or our energy, our essence is in this suit, and a meat suit, as Jen calls it. And, you know, I believe that not necessarily everybody stays there. I've been to cemeteries many times and not experienced any activity. And then other times it's just been off the chain. So what is that? I'm not sure, you know, I mean, but you know, the experience we had down there at that cemetery with you while filming was profound for me. And it was very profound. You know, it was almost a reversal of roles in a lot of way between me and Jen.
Okay. Now, before we get to the details of that, had you ever experienced anything like that, let's say in more ancient tribal ground or burial grounds that don't have headstones, that don't have any markers that you may have come across, that even that you don't know for sure that anything was buried underneath? But probability tells me that a good deal of the United States, there are burial grounds everywhere.
Yes. Yeah, I've had many. Like I said, I've had sometimes I've had some really intense feelings happen to me at a native site. And other times, not so much. And same thing with American style burials as well. I don't know why or what could be the cause of that, but it's almost the same for me anyway as something that I experience in a haunted location, like a house or a business as well. Sometimes you get a lot of activity, other times you don't. That's just me personally. Now, there's a lot of other investigators out there that feel they get stuff every time they go to a cemetery or a sacred place. But, you know, I think a lot of it is up to, like, each individual has different methods and abilities and can pick up on different things than, say, the next guy would, you know. So, you know, it's one of those things that there's no formula or rhyme or reason why that happens. It just happens like that with each individual person, I think.
Did you ever, when you were walking on sacred ground or near it, or something that you suspected might be a burial ground but had no markers, was there ever a negative feeling? Did you ever feel like you shouldn't be there?
Yes, a couple of different places. One was in what they call it the Haunted Amusement Park here in West Virginia. And there are over 3,000 natives buried there. And when I first time I ever walked onto that property, I got a really uneasy feeling, like I wasn't supposed to be there, and it did not feel right. And there has been numerous white folks that have died there when it was an amusement park. And I feel that haunting and the paranormal activity that goes on there is because they built that place right on top of that sacred burial ground, thus disrespecting that sacred aspect of that native ground, you know? So I think there's a direct relation or correlation to some of the hauntings that go on all around the world, not just here in America, but all around the world when it comes to some sacred sites.
Right. I had investigated that spot for Strange World And I had some odd feelings there. And so you confirm, we know for a fact there were bodies buried there and it was native ground. But can you confirm for a fact that there are a multitude of people that have experienced a negative energy, perhaps have even been attacked, or at least they claim to?
Yeah, absolutely. I've interviewed numerous witnesses and experiencers that have been on that, you know, because West Virginia is my home state of where I base my home base out of. And I've, you know, I'm kind of considered the West Virginia man because I've done so many investigations here. And I've interviewed umpteens amount of people that have been there, that, and a lot of the, you know, a lot of the stories and experiences people report to me are that they felt uneasy. They were, felt like they could be attacked at any second. And then other people were physically scratched, pushed. The guy, like you said, was thrown. I've actually talked to that guy. I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but he relayed his story to me as well years ago. And, yeah, I believe it 100%. And, the guy that used to run it, his brother runs it now, but he told me many stories of people being attacked on that property over the years that he ran it before he died of a heart attack.
Right. He died of a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And so why is it, do you think, that when land is built over, even if it's unbeknownst to the people who are building, like in the Black Hope curse case, the old slave cemetery in Texas. Why is it that you think that people have to pay the freight for maybe something they're not even aware of? What is that energy? I mean, whatever insight you can give, I appreciate it.
Well, first off, you know, when you're talking about, say, the haunted amusement park in particular, so the first homesteaders, the whites that came over here, we know for a fact that some of his kids were taken by the natives that lived in that area because they were really mad that he built his homestead on their property. You know, they consider that their sacred land, their land. And they found both of his kids burned alive, basically. And then he put together a hunting party and went after them and hunted that tribe down and killed a bunch of them and brought his kids' bodies back and buried them. And so, in my belief system in the paranormal as an investigator, I'm a firm believer in that kind of bad energy stains the very ground it happens on, and it lingers, you know, and it's bad. It's just bad juju all around. And that's a prime situation for a haunting in my book, and based off my 30 plus years of experience doing this stuff. And that's what I look for when I'm investigating these things. You know, what happened here way back? Did anything happen here? What kind of, you know, tragic events happen, murders, battles, whatever the case may be. And I think that when there's a war going on, basically, over the rights to that land, you know, and that can create that type of scenario. And you know, being a little bit native, and Jen, you know, Jen's a lot native, and many of her relatives and my relatives, you know, they put protection spirits on those properties. Elementals, if you will, in, for lack of a better word, and not, you know, not knowing the native tongue of that, but they do put protection spirits on those properties. And when they are violated, it seems time after time again, I've investigated thousands of locations, even some of these housing projects and places that I've investigated, guess what? They're built on Native American sacred burial ground, and their graves have been desecrated. They've been grave robbed and everything else. So there's some kind of bad energy there that is unleashed, almost like if you talk about like the pyramids, King Tut, and all those, you know, those type of curses. It seems it crosses all cultural boundaries in a lot of aspects, you know, when these areas are violated, so to speak. And I'm a firm believer in that. I think that's, you know, maybe the root cause of some of that stuff, some of the hauntings and the paranormal phenomena that occurs.
I wonder how it manifests. I wonder if it could be measured one day through quantum physics or quantum science. Like, for instance, so there's this offensive thing taking place, and it's as if almost an entity manifests out of the offense. Do you believe it's a literal spirit that's doing the attacking, or is it something else that we can't fully comprehend at this moment? Like, in other words, something manifests out of the idea of desecrating the sacred land. Something manifests out of the idea of it in the quantum realm or metaphysically, where this thing just occurs. This thing occurs because there's a disruption. There's a lack of respect. You know, and there's several experiments where, for instance, I think it's the double slit experiment, where when you're not looking, this thing occurs. In other words, like when you're staring at it, you know, these particles don't split and they don't go in these different directions. But when you're not looking, it actually happens. There's something to that. What is that? And maybe it's somewhat connected. If there's this offensive act happening, perhaps this energy manifests and it's negative. And I'm always trying to think about it on a different level. Or if you simplified it, would you say it's just an angry spirit?
Well, I think it's all connected, Christopher. I mean, we're making great leaps and bounds in quantum physics. And I think people are discovering that some of this phenomena correlates with quantum physics and everything else. I mean, it's really hard to really speculate on this stuff, what causes this and what causes that. But, you know, you got to look at the numbers, and someone that has many, many cases, has investigated many, many cases over the years, whatever. And they have a lot of those numbers that are in the 80, 90 percentile, you know, that something's occurring when people violate these areas. So whether it's, you know, just a ghost manifesting or whatever, we know that natives are very drawn to energy. They practice energy medicine. They practice lots of different energy techniques, and they may have an upper echelon of knowledge, so to speak, of those, how to manipulate those energies. You know, many tribes claim they are from the stars. So who knows what they know that the average Joe doesn't know, you know. Maybe they do know how to manipulate some of those energies much better than other people do. But I'm telling you right now, I've investigated place after place after place that was haunted with all kinds of the whole gambit of paranormal activity going on that were built on Native American sites over the years. So there's definitely something going on there. I mean, I'm not going to try to say I know without a shadow of a doubt what is causing it, but you know, I kind of try to break it down in a more simpler terms so I can understand it. And so when I try to explain it to other people, I'm saying, look, you know, it was a Native American site. There's horrific battles, or there was executions here, or this is a graveyard, you know, a Native American burial ground, and you're having all this activity go on. So we try to bring in a shaman or someone of that nature to quell the activity down and make offerings and whatnot. And a lot of times it works. So, you know, it's definitely something going on there.
Okay. And then, so we move over to a modern or, you know, somewhat modern cemetery. And there are tales of lonely souls and lost souls roaming cemeteries. I mean, I've heard so many of them over the years. They were some of the greatest ghost stories that I've heard. And, you know, hitchhiking ghosts walking by cemeteries, seen in the cemetery. And in the case of us visiting, you know, our discussion was exactly what we just talked about. I wanted to know the power of a resting place, the power of a graveyard, a cemetery, or a burial ground, what that holds. There's this air of respect to it. There's this air of rest. And when it's disrupted, it could cause something. However, we weren't disrupting. We came in with respect, the best possible way we could, documenting a conversation about exactly what we were just talking about. And you and Jan experienced something. Could you both tell me one at a time what you experienced?
So when we arrived, Hope and I had been talking just at the Jeep there and, you know, just getting things out, getting ready for the shot. You were getting things set up, and Dave had already gone to my back was to him, and he was just walking along. And sometimes, at least for me as a psychic, I'm not tuned in because it constantly sounds like a low hum because there's so much going on energetically in a graveyard due to the layers of intention, the layers of ritualistic visitation. People are, you know, entering into communication with spirit just energetically, like every time they come. And the next thing I know, Dave is asking me to come here. He said, "You're never going to believe this. This is really awesome. Like, I just want you to come here. I think I just heard something." And I looked at him and
I asked you if you heard that. Did you hear that?
Yeah. And I said, "What are you doing?" And he looked at me and he said, "Did you hear that?" And I said, "Hear what?" And I heard a young girl said, "I like to sing." And neither one of us talked to each other about what we heard. I just heard that in my head. And he said, "It was like humming." Like, okay, so clearly we're talking about the same spirit. We're hearing the same thing. And he was already at a dead speed walk, already like at a beeline to where this marker was. And they're beautifully like hedged in, each one separate. And as we got closer, it was just pretty amazing. We were switching roles a little bit. Dave was getting the psychic messages and I was kind of just taking it in and validating, you know, I did hear her say, "I like to sing." I knew it was a girl. He said, "It's a young girl." And, you know, I didn't even say any of that yet. And he's just getting this message and messages and messages. And he's like, "Oh my gosh, look." And on the tombstone had several relevant things that were related to Dave. One of which was the name Kay. Kay's daughter, or Dave's daughter's also named Kay. And there was a rose, and Rose is very specific and important to Dave too, as far as family surname goes, connected to him. And it just started culminating. You could feel it. It was palpable. You could feel that there was things going on, and he's like getting more messages, and he just started talking. Do you want to say what you heard?
I just heard the humming, and, you know, and then you were validating it. And then as I'm looking, it was almost like she called me over there, because I was about 20 yards from where her grave actually was. And I heard this little girl humming, and then I turned back to Jen. I was like, "Did you hear that?" Cause I, you know, I'm always checking to see if anyone else, or if it was audible to anyone else, because I don't, you know, that's really not my forte. I investigate things. I try to get hard, tangible evidence on an audio recorder or on camera, you know? So, and I was trying to confirm if anyone else heard the humming. And when I got to the grave, I saw the little girl's picture, relayed that to them, and they start, Hope and Jen came over there. And then that's when I really freaked out, because she had a UFO and an alien on her tombstone. I'm like, this can't be happening right now. Cause I've literally investigated hundreds of graveyards and I've never, ever seen a tombstone that had anything like that on it. And
so at that point I sprang into, I guess, investigator mode. Like I said, the roles were switching, and it was so dynamic in nature. I just started snapping pictures, because when he pointed out the UFO and the alien, I'm like, okay, there's something really big going on here right now. And I'm telling you, I could feel things. I could hear things. It was very palpable. The energy was very, it was somber, but it was a beautiful day, and it just was a buzz. It really was. And Dave was excited. He was like, "Wow, that was loud." It was like, it really happened to him in real time.
I guess Jim would call it another message, because it hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm like, she knows what we're here doing. She knows we're here filming this, and she's into this. And then we started reading the foot bench on her grave, and it talked about
Daddy's little ghost
and Mommy's little shadow. And I'm like, holy crap, this is not happening, because she knows we're here doing this, and she wants us to relay a message to her mom, and she wants us to know that she, you know, really enjoys what we're doing too. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. It was all in my head. I heard the voice. I heard it telling me this in my head. It wasn't my thinking. It was a little girl's voice in my head telling me all this stuff.
Now, let me ask you, when you go to cemeteries, and I'm sure you've done some investigations near them or in them, right?
Oh, hundreds.
Okay. Have you had a similar experience to this before?
Nothing that powerful, nothing that was that compelling and just on point, you know, because it just doesn't happen. Of course, I've seen some weird shadows play in the graveyards and heard recorded voices and heard a few voices, but nothing like that where it was so like there was no coincidence in it whatsoever.
Sure. And it turns out after a little further investigating, she was obsessed. It was the love of her life was the paranormal. I mean, it was a serious thing. And that her mother, they wrote an article in a local paper that, you know, her mother celebrated that she loved the X-Files, that she loved ghost stories, and she loved the paranormal and UFO tales. And, you know, all of that was really touching my heart, just hearing it come from you and Jen. And then I felt it, and I started thinking about it just as a storyteller for this movie, that I was like, you know, I really feel like, number one, she wants to get in contact with her mom. Mm-hmm. And number two, she'd love to be a part of this thing. Now, I don't know why I feel that, because trust me, I've been around a lot of haunted places myself. And, you know, I've never felt that ever, you know, and it's a sad feeling. I want to ask you, why do you think certain spirits are still in the cemetery? Why do they roam the cemeteries? Do they feel like it's a conduit for visitors? Why are they there?
I don't think they're always there. Some may be with unfinished business, or, you know, don't feel like they can get to the next level, so to speak. But some people actually, in spirit, at least what I've found when I've communicated, is that they are attuned to the vibratory essence that we bring to that place, and it resonated with her. So who knows if she was there on the earth plane, or she felt us in her sacred resting space and was like, wow, there's people that can hear me here. They're part of the paranormal. This is really cool. And even in death, I can be a part of this, and I can further contribute to this area that I love so much, and I can get a message to my mom. So I feel like we hit her radar, so to speak. A lot of times, you know, it's vice versa, and a spirit is trying to get through, but I feel like we were in her space and she took the opportunity.
Right. And we discovered that she died tragically in a car accident. Mm-hmm. When that happens, is there and again, of course, it's all conjecture, but you do have a lot of experience speaking to spirits and speaking to family members. When someone dies tragically, do you believe that they're caught in some kind of limbo?
Sometimes the displacement of the soul due to the blunt force trauma does displace them on different dimensional realities. I mean, even working on the ambulance, I can tell you that I've had that experience in the back of an ambulance physically before I really embraced my gifts. I could feel spirits trying to get back to their body, so to speak, because they weren't really sure what happened. And, you know, there's instances too where I've helped spirits cross over because they are kind of wandering aimlessly throughout looking for what happened. Where do I go? They didn't have a belief system. They're not sure what the next step is. They have guilt or heavy other emotions that are holding them down to this earth plane. There's so many different scenarios that we could talk about, speaking to your question, but it's very interesting that some do immediately transcend and go to the next dimensional reality or where they need to go for processing and how they complete their journey. And other times people are very stuck.
Yeah, I've experienced that too, Christopher, especially like on battlefields is a big one for me. You know, I talk about those tragic incidences where someone's life is taken in an instant, like on a battlefield. You know, they're running, they're charging. Next thing you know, they're hit with a cannonball and their head's gone. You know, it's instant. It happens so quick that sometimes I feel that they're not even aware they're dead yet. And sometimes they linger in limbo because of that. Because
it's odd that you say that, because one of the greatest ghost stories, American ghost stories ever told, was The Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Yes.
And in the book, in Washington Irving's book, the Headless Horseman loses his head in battle by a cannonball.
Right.
And, you know, he's this kind of, he's this, the specter, if he does exist in the story, you know, because it's, they speculate whether or not it was really him. But it's this, these tragedies that leave things behind. For instance, you know, I always bring it up. I feel like there was activity at the Amityville house, and Ron DeFeo did kill his entire family there. And they left the bed frames. George Lutz, the new resident who experienced the haunting and the poltergeist, kept the bed frames where everyone was murdered in their beds. And, you know, do you believe something like that can retain energy, like a battlefield, or even if someone dies tragically and is buried in a cemetery?
Absolutely. That's one of the things I talk about quite often. I believe those tragic events, you know, they stain the very ground, the walls, everything in that structure can be affected, whether it's a bed frame, a clock, the floor, you know, because their energy, say if they're bleeding, you know, that tragic incidents where they're bleeding all over the place, they're bleeding out, that stains the very floors or walls of that house or building, whatever structure you want to talk about, but, or the very ground, like say if it's a battlefield, I believe that energy lingers on because it was such a horrible, you know, event that it just literally stains and persists on for whatever reason. And sometimes, you know, we've talked about tulpas before, people manifesting things, you know, because we have an ability as people to manifest things. So if enough people, it's like the collective consciousness, right? You know, if enough people get together and we pray, we've seen it happen. Jen and I have done it with her groups of folks. You know, we pray for someone who's very sick and they come out of it within a few days sometimes. And we feel that that energy, that concentrated energy of everybody focusing on that can also manifest good things. But if you do the flip side of the coin, some bad things can happen too when enough people concentrate on bad situations or bad energy, so to speak. So there's a lot out there and we can go down the rabbit hole on many, like Jen said, on many different aspects of these things.
So in this case, even though it was a tragic ending, the interaction between you and this ghost, this spirit, her spirit, was pleasant. There was nothing negative about it. Can you tell me a story about the inverse of that? Was there a tragic end and then a spirit that you really didn't enjoy interacting with?
Well, one thing that did happen on our particular trip there is, and Jen can fill you in on more what she told me this was, but the next day when we were waiting to film more stuff at the house with you, in the hotel, I literally thought I was having a heart attack. And I mean, it hurt really bad. I've never had any kind of chest pain like that in my entire life. And she started working on me and stuff with Reiki and whatnot and clearing me. Because I literally didn't, I mean, I set up and I was in some serious pain. I was like, uh-oh, I think I'm having a heart attack. And it took a good 10 minutes or so after she worked on me for it to go away. And she put some stuff, some oil on me and whatnot. But I really think that little girl was in, I think that spirits can like imprint on you sometimes. And she was trying to show me what happened to her in that car. I think when she was ejected from the car, and I think she was crushed. Her chest was crushed. And that's what my chest felt like. It felt like it was, I couldn't breathe. It was like I was crushed, you know?
Here's another aspect of this too. During all of this, I mean, he literally, I have a background as an EMT. So, you know, my first role is to make sure he doesn't need an ambulance physically. He's not physically in trouble. He did feel like he was compromised on some level. He couldn't quite take a deep breath. I mean, I was assessing him like medically, but also spiritually and psychically trying to read this. And all I heard in my brain was homicide, homicide, homicide. And I thought, that doesn't make sense. I don't understand what that means. And I felt like, you know, she's trying to impress upon Dave something very important. And he wasn't listening with his mind, like with his claircognizance. So she was going to show him, mm-hmm. and she did. So I asked her to stop showing him because it was hurting him and to just tell me. And homicide just kept coming up and coming up. I'm like, okay, I get it. Some aspect of this is like either like noted homicide, written down homicide, and that's not what happened. Like, that's not okay. That's not fair. I get it. Let me have this energy off of him and I will clear him and bless him. And we will, and I literally said out loud, we'll tell your mom. We'll let your mom know. We'll tell somebody. Just let, I wanted Dave to be okay. I was trying to clear the energy. I was blessing him. And the energy finally released. I remember him standing up and he was able to take a deep breath. Because then, you know, if he's not able to take a deep breath after I do that, then we do have to move into medical.
What is it that you think she was trying to communicate?
And I even said at the grave, it was a car wreck, remember?
He
said, that's it. And after the hotel incident, she goes, I'm looking that up.
I got really, I felt very obligated at that point. Okay. So, and I did tell her, I said, okay, I'll let somebody know. I'll figure it out. And at that point I'm like thinking to myself, how the heck am I going to figure it out? And again, here we are, role reversed, right? Like usually I'm the psychic. I just get the messages and I just say what I'm getting. I don't have to research things or whatever, but I used to work in fire, police and EMS. So, you know, I do know how to research things and find what I need. And I looked up the accident. I tried to find out like what happened. I looked up her name and it came up. And the exact article that you earlier kind of referenced about her loving the X-Files, I was like, oh my gosh, it did say that there was another little girl in the car, I believe. Wasn't
yeah,
it?
And it was investigated as a homicide, vehicular homicide.
Yes. And they did think that there may have been an additional vehicle, but no one ever said
no one
that.
Ever saw it or said it.
And I did look up her mom's name. I tried to find that to even maybe send her a message, let her know. But that's when we told you about it, that we had located her and, you know, how to proceed with that.
Right. You know, and I had structured the story for A Haunting We Will Go for the most part. I mean, there's a lot of things that unfold in post-production, but as a good documentarian and a good filmmaker, you need to stay open, especially when it's a documentary, to these things that come to you. And you have to have discretion and say, well, I'm not going to put this in the movie. This is a great story, but it just doesn't fit. This fits because it comes full circle with the story that the movie opens with, which is my cousin Cindy dying horribly and in a car accident when she was young. And my mother being visited by her ghost. And I've believed my mother when I was a kid. I believe her now. And so she tells that tale. But that comes full circle to this in the last quarter of the film. And it's still unfolding. I'm in post-production and I want to just get a couple of, we can keep loose ends. Some ghost stories are loose ends, but somehow I need to have a little bit more. And so I know you both are coming back out for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause it was so amazing. It just doesn't happen like that. It's very rare, you know? And the amazing thing was, Jen and I had never stepped foot in that place before, ever. You had been there in the front, you said. We'd never been, none of us had ever been to the back area where you wanted to film that day. And then this whole scenario goes down. We didn't know her, you know, we didn't know anything about this little girl until all of that went down. And then I got something physically happened to me from it as well. And then Jen looked it up and sure enough, it was like, bam, 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 right in a line. There's no coincidence in it. It was pure, just on the spot occurring, and we all witnessed it and experienced a part of it, of some, you know, all of us experienced it. And it was just amazing. You know, it just doesn't often happen that way. And it, to me, it was one of the most profound experiences I've ever had doing this in the past 30 plus years, because normally I don't get any kind of messages that intense. I've got, you know, I can feel things, don't get me wrong. And we all, most of us have that ability to feel things. Some of us can tune in a little bit better. I can feel if it's happy, bad, sad, or mad, that type of energy. I'm used to feeling that kind of stuff when I walk into a location that has paranormal activity going on, but nothing this intense has ever happened to me personally like that for that many things. And then to be affected physically, because she was, I truly feel that she was showing me what happened to her, because I wasn't as open. She knew I could hear her, so she was trying to tell me something else. But that the second day, I wasn't really tuned in like that for whatever reason. So she physically showed me, hey, I got crushed under the car, you know, or whatever it was. And then sure enough, Jen looked it up and it was all right in line, you know, with what happened. And that was amazing. It was an amazing experience. I'll never forget it as long as I live.
We'll be right back.
What do you want to do with this?
On December 18th, 1975, George and Kathy Lutz and their three children moved into a house in Amityville, Long Island. 19 days later, they were running for their lives. What happened to them became one of the best-selling books in years and is now a fascinating motion picture. An experience in terror to make you believe in the unbelievable. The Amityville Horror. From American International, rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This series presents information based in part on theory and conjecture. The producer's purpose is to suggest some possible explanations, but not necessarily the only ones, to the mysteries we will examine.
Brief interviews with you at the May Stringer Mansion, and we did a walkthrough, and that is still going to appear in the documentary. But I think this was your reasoning for being part of it. You know, this story itself that unfolded during the making, as good documentaries tend to allow. But I don't know. I feel something from it, and I feel like the audience will too. But this story is still unfolding. In all of your travels and all the cases that you investigated, you know, do you feel like I need to ask you this, because I see a lot of these, and this isn't a way to bash anything. It's just a question. I see so many television shows where just about every episode, people are having this profound, either demonic or poltergeist type experience. In your experience, is it that easy? Does it happen just like that? Because in my own, it's not.
No, not at all.
Okay.
To be honest, not at all. And I will put my name up against anybody out there as far as experience level goes in this field and trying to investigate and research and document these types of things. It just doesn't happen like that. I mean, I've been on some real humdingers, if you want to say, of some really negative energy. At one time, I feel I picked up an attachment from a location. I've also been physically scratched and stuff over the years. I've got pictures and videos of me bleeding for no reason whatsoever. Now, I don't think that's necessarily demonic, though. Now, some people of a different mindset might say, oh, if they scratch you or tag you as a demon. No, I don't believe that. I think it goes right along with what me and Jen just talked about, that some of these spirits know you can hear them and communicate with them, and some of them don't understand why they can see you or interact with you, but you can't always interact with them. And I feel that sometimes they lash out because they don't understand why you can't communicate with them at will, like they're trying to communicate with you. So they'll lash out and scratch you or whatever, you know. And I was on a live interview for a show one time at Pennhurst Asylum. And as I'm giving an interview, standing up being filmed, I said, guys, my right, the right side of my face is on fire. I think something's scratching me, and they filmed a scratch for him right on my face. So, you know, something was trying to communicate. I wasn't listening, and it lashed out a little bit. And I think, you know, can you put yourself, you know, I when I talk to communicate with spirits, I try to talk to them just like we're talking right now. And I think they try to do the same, but they don't understand why we're not interacting with them. And, you know, imagine putting yourself in that situation. There's some weirdo in your house you don't know, or where you're living, or where you stayed, and they're just doing whatever, and you don't understand it. So you're going to be like, hey, they might be screaming at you, get out of here. I don't like you. Why are you in my house? And they lash out and scratch you, attack you, you know?
Do you believe that these spirits know they're dead? I mean, I'm sure it varies, but do you think some of them don't realize they're actually?
Yeah, I don't think some of them know they're even dead. I think they still think they're among the living, and they're like, what in the heck's going on? That's why you find a lot of hauntings when, say, a new family moves into a house and they start remodeling it or whatever. And in a lot of cases I've investigated over the years, there's a lot of paranormal activity that sometimes occurs during these types of situations. Because think about it, you know, if you use common sense and you're a spirit, but you don't know you've passed on, and you see these weird people in your house and they're tearing the walls out and stuff, you might get a little perturbed, you know? I mean, I try to break it down into common sense. What would I do? You know, how would I put myself in their shoes? You know, I can understand why maybe sometimes somebody gets scratched or whatever because of those particular situations, and everyone's different. Yeah, that's what people don't understand. It's not like you go out every week and it's a demon manifesting, attacking people or whatever. You know, it just doesn't happen like that. I've seen some stuff like that. You know, I've been through some stuff like that. But, you know, if you think about, in my case, 30 plus years of doing this, I've only seen that, I can count them on one hand. You know, and that's literally thousands of investigations.
Is there a location or several locations that you will never return to because of the activity inside and how dangerous it might be?
Well, my own house, the Willow's Weep House, is so negative and such a just a full of negative stuff. I closed it down right before COVID. Because a good friend of mine was attacked spiritually by something in that house. And he ended up getting part of his foot and toe cut off because he got, after the scratch occurred, he ended up getting gangrene for no reason. He didn't even know he was scratched. He didn't know anything. Didn't scratch his leg on anything. He had long pants on. And, you know, and he still has problems from it. So there's a few places, yeah, I mean, I can say that are very, very heavily negative out there. But as far as me as being an investigator, I don't really shy away. Jen will try to keep me out of some situations that she reads psychically and say, nah, I don't, you know, I think this is going on there. And that place just needs to be, you know, a shaman needs to go in there or whatever the case and clear it out because it's really bad.
So, do you feel there are any physical ailments that have manifested because of your experience in some of these places, in some of the negative places?
Yeah. Well, after a particular case where, so I'm kind of known for expending an exuberant amount of time in some of these locations. I don't just go in, I know, I'm not saying I haven't done this, but I don't just go in for one night of 6-7 hours and investigate. I've actually literally spent over a month 24/7 in places before, or 2 weeks 24/7, or 3 weeks or another week. I've done that numerous times. So I think that immersing myself in the situation that family might be in, or in a location longer, will allow me to experience, or have a better chance to per se to experience what is really going on in that location. So, you know, having said that, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, that's kind of how I operate, because I believe that the more time you get to spend in it, the more chances you'll have to really try to get down to the nitty gritty and figure out what's going on there and what's causing this activity.
And this is for both you and Jen, because I know you have knowledge of it. So once you're there and you absorb these things and they've affected you, and then sometimes negatively, what do you do to cleanse and decompress from these situations, especially if the place is, you know, somewhat I guess, allegedly demonic or a poltergeist or something really negative. What do you do to get that out of your system?
So, you know, preparation is half the battle. So we usually try to prepare so we don't have that experience. If we do, if something does happen, I mean, you know, I'm trained as a shaman, as a spiritualist minister. I'm Cherokee, so I'm a Reiki master times four. And I've studied this because I wanted to perfect my craft. I wanted to understand and know different cultural perspectives on how to release energy, how to heal things. And, you know, we use a lot of protection going in. But if it does happen or it happens to somebody we're with, I usually take them out of the location or take us out of the location. We say a prayer. We use frankincense oil. We'll do, if it gets really bad and it's, you know, looking like it's a nasty spirit and it's attached to the person, we're going to have to go into like exorcism rites. Not all Catholic. When I say exorcism rites, I have a modality that I blend the Native American approach with a religious approach with Reiki. So it's almost like, and there's two other things that I kind of would rather not mention, just because it's sacred and you become trained in it and you have to honor that sacredness. And if you're acting as a conduit of energy, allowing this entity, which might be sick, it might be a sick spirit in need of some healing itself. So you have to tease that out and be like, okay, is this entity attached to this person? Is this a human spirit? Do they need help crossing over? And teasing that out and really finding out the problem a lot of times is half the battle. Because if the spirit is sick, I deal with a lot of sick humans as a therapist, you know, as a mental health issue, as a physical issue, as a spiritual, as an energy. And once we determine that spirit just might need to be lifted off into the light and sent into the proper direction. And they could be confused. They could be stuck. They could be, it could be blunt force trauma. It could be, you know, a sudden dispersion of that energy. A lot of times on a quantum level is going to lead to, like, you know, maybe psychic PTSD. It's oftentimes an explosive type of release for the energy and they don't know what's going on. So
in other words, is a spirit sick because of something really horrible that happened while they were still alive and induced their transition?
Absolutely. A lot of times, you know, especially, you know, people that are abused and they're just fractured repeatedly on a soul level. I mean, they become very angry and bitter. And a lot of times the demonic possessions and the places that have extremely horrible energy, it's because it's layer after layer after layer of trauma. So if you can understand the point of pain from the spirit, a lot of times, you know, I help heal both the living and the dead. It's not just living people. I help. A lot of times a spirit will attach to somebody because they are the brightest light in a place. You know, we take our energy and they see this bright light coming where they haven't seen that before. They want to leave with that bright light. They don't even know what's going on a lot of times. So
I just know the light feels good and mm-hmm. it's good and they want to be there, because the longer they linger, the sicker they can become.
More stagnant.
Yeah. More stagnant. And they need to crawl. They need to go where they're supposed to go and get that unfinished business, per se, unfinished, you know, because the longer they linger, they will become negative.
There is a story. I will tell you, it was an accident. I accidentally emoted on a level and empathized with a spirit that was sick, who had similar trauma to mine on this earth plane. And I literally migrated her out of the location, and it is Dave's location. And that's a little bit of a leak for the book number two, but I feel like it's necessary because, and I will tell you, Christopher, Dave's in the last 4.5 years, I've seen him evolve as an investigator. I would say he's in this process of, you know, the evolution of an investigator, like pulling the whole entire paranormal field forward or elevate it, because everything isn't a demon. Everything isn't going to go exactly like you see on TV shows. It's very, you know,
it's so much different.
Rehearsed, and and very trite, if you ask me, because that's not what happens. And I see him now getting more claircognizant, like he's hearing spirit, where he was just empathic before he could feel things, but he wasn't going into the energy and being able to read it. Now he's doing that. He's ascertaining, is this spirit stuck? Is the spirit sick? What do they need? What kind of spirit it is? And that's a lot of things that I think when we work together, that kind of, you know, dovetails what I do and what he does. And now in this instance, we totally flipped roles, and it's really cool. And I took an amazing shot, and I didn't even realize I took the shot just with my cell phone. You literally can see an energy vortex, like a portal in front of her grave. And there's a light coming into the shot where the sun was on the opposite side. There's no way there could be light there. And I literally didn't find that for what, like a day?
I told her, because I had left my phone in my camera in your, over at her car at your house. And we were going through all that. I'm like, I said, start taking pictures. And she was taking them, and she got some amazing stuff on there. So, you know, we totally had a role reversal, because that's usually my job. You know, I just take pictures, film, whatever. And it was so cool. I mean, the whole experience was just phenomenal. And, you know, I can't say enough about it, because it affected me on a much higher level of this stuff.
Sure. And we're going to be returning soon. And I know several things that I need to close the story with, whether we get in touch with her mother or not. And we both made attempts, but I believe we can try one more time and be effective. If not, the story can still be told. Because it's really the story of her reaching out. My heartstrings are pulled that I can't get in touch with her mom.
I think it'll happen.
Okay, yeah, because I believe her mother would truly appreciate all of this. You, the movie, everything. I wanted to ask you, so I talked a bit about how you decompress from a location that might be heavy. So let's say you were to enter a place, and maybe where, and I'm only speculating, but where a lot of sick spirits are. Let's say you went into an abandoned place like Willowbrook Asylum, or you know, where people were treated horribly, obscenely, and there was a lot of pain and anguish and even psychological disorder. And how do you prepare to go in a place like that? Okay, so we got cut off. And you believe it had something to do with the questions I was asking? You believe a spirit came in, and or the spirit of this young girl came in and affected our recording?
I literally, soon as he said, we need to let her mom know, and you said, we will, the whole computer went black.
I said, it's going to happen.
Dave said, he's saying it, it's going to happen. The computer's completely black screened. I'm looking at the cord. It's plugged into the wall. It has 100% battery. And I'm telling you, I said, it's the girl. It's the girl. She wants her mom to know. She wants her mom to know. And that's another sign that she's coming through. She's just wanting us to know she's still here. She's still monitoring what's going on.
Well, I haven't forgotten her. And it's going to be a glorious tribute to her in this movie. And the experience that we all had, and the experience that you and Dave had. And it's stuff like this that I don't, you know, I've been to a lot of haunted locations, and I think I felt suffocated one time when I was in Silver City Ghost Town. But that was the only time I ever felt anything outside. I mean, I had my own experiences, and I've had whisperings and visitations, but I never had any physical. Oh, maybe I shouldn't say that. I did, actually, when I was in Michigan. I was waking up in a horrible state over and over again. But you do this a lot, and you went to a variety of locations. And one of the questions I really wanted to ask you was, so a place like the Willowbrook Asylum, or a place where there are just umpteenth tortured souls. There were horrible things done to people. People were tortured. People were in tortured frames of mind, tortured spirits while they were alive. We talked about how you can decompress from certain situations, but how do you prepare to go into a situation like that, especially even when this visiting this young girl's grave again might be a heavy experience for you? What would you do going into a place like Willowbrook Asylum?
So the preparation for the reading of any facility, house, location, I have layers of protection and I have layers of communication. That's just how I do it. I don't particularly like them using my physical body as the medium. I would like for them to show me, tell me. Sometimes I smell, I see, I hear, and I'm a medium, so I could just talk directly to them. So that makes it easy. When it affects my physical body, I feel like that's a violation of sorts. I can usually douse things out too. I use a pendulum just
pre-read it.
There's a lot of times that I see what kind of situation we're going to get in prior to going there. So I try to prepare in that way. I don't like to read it before I get there because if I open the door, then it's intense. So they want to come now and tell the story and I want to experience it when I'm there. And there's been times that I've read cold cases and I've gotten things that have been really like almost like unbelievable, even for me. And, you know, the validation in and of itself is awesome, but the healing of the spirit, the healing of the location is very important to me too, because I feel like a lot of times we should leave a place better than we find it. Not all spirits want to be trapped somewhere. That's not fair to them to go there and not offer that. There are paranormal places and the people have agreements to not clear. But I'm a healer and I'm going to tell you that my first priority is the well-being of the humans and the well-being of the spirit. So if
you protect yourself.
Yeah, I do protect myself a lot, but I am in service to humanity basically as a conduit to provide healing to whatever, whomever on whatever level and dimensional reality they're on. So unless it's going to cause harm to myself or someone else, I will offer the assistance. But a lot of times, you know, the preparation is just as important as the actual experience of being there.
As for me, man, in the early days, I used to just run and gun and I'd say a couple prayers and cover myself in the blood of Jesus Christ and run and gun, man. And that got me into some trouble sometimes. I will say, from the one house that I spent over 30 days in and went back three more times for 2 weeks each time after that, I ended up getting an attachment from that. And, you know, because, you know, I come from a more scientific back in those days and I was just trying to document paranormal evidence, so to speak, and wasn't as in tune as I am now, thanks to Jen, on the spiritual side of things and the protection of oneself. So I would recommend to anyone listening to this show that they use whatever religious background they believe in to protect themselves if they are doing this type of thing. And it doesn't hurt to know what type of location and where you're going into that you might be able to pull from that side of it too, to protect yourself as well, whether it's Native American or Buddhism or Hinduism, it doesn't matter. Whatever you're using, use that and, maybe find out more about what situation you may be walking into, or talk to a person like Jen or another healer who delves into that side of it more, because what we're doing nowadays is, you know, it's kind of cutting edge. You know, we're not only trying to clear locations, but we're healing living people, Jen is, and healing the location and healing spirits as well. So I think we're trying to push this field forward in many different aspects, not just, you know, your average ghost hunt, so to speak.
What does the future of communicating with the dead, so to speak, look like? Because were we meant to communicate with the dead? I mean, why is it so difficult to do? Yet again, there are so many accounts throughout history of people doing it. A lot of it by chance, it just appears, you know, a ghost appears and fades away. But in the case of, I would say at least in the last 25, 30 years, ghost hunting in a sense has become a sport for a lot of people, entertainment for others, and a very serious attempt at advancing a communication in the afterlife. Yet nobody, well, I shouldn't say nobody, but a lot of people can't unanimously agree that there is an afterlife, that we can't just agree on that with all of the evidence to support it. What does the future of this look like?
Hopefully it looks like frequency. Hopefully it looks like the advancement of our humanity as understanding the quantum fabric that we live in, that we reside in, and we don't just reside in this quantum multi-dimensional reality in a physical body. We are an energy being, a spiritual being that exists beyond the physical. So once it expires, we continue on. And astrophysicists have proven this to be true. So there's so many different layers of avenues we can go into, but hopefully it looks like the evolution of this paranormal field into a quantum understanding of how metaphysical, spiritual energy, paranormal, supernatural all has an overlay, and this is it. And maybe we will work in frequency and we will have people read resonance far greater and better than we have before, because a spirit that is sick is going to have a different resonance than a spirit that is not. Somebody's passed over grandma that just wants to say hello and that they're okay and they don't have any more breathing issues anymore and they've made it to heaven, or they're baking or fishing or whatever they're doing, is a much different resonance than somebody who's been traumatized and had blunt force trauma and forced out of their body in a very tragic situation. So that resonance, when a psychic or a healer or a medium can read resonance, it's a game changer. And I think the paranormal field, in my opinion, with my experience with Dave in the last few years and how things have been going in his life, he's advancing tremendously in his understanding. He has a ton of experience and all this expertise where he's had 3 decades plus of investigations, and now he's getting new layers, new lenses, and really applying things and forwarding this whole field, you know, with this experience and the different modalities he has access to now too. And we're trying some really cool things and experiments to hopefully teach people and help them understand this is not compartmentalized. This is all one thing if we allow ourselves to be able to see it from that perspective.
Yeah, it's one of man's greatest unanswered questions, you know, and I think that's why it's become, I think we're, as a species, we're actually advancing somewhat. So people want answers.
Welcome back to Off to the Witch. I'm your host, Christopher Garitano, and I want to thank you for joining the conversation tonight. Even though the afterlife seems to be an eternal mystery, we do have millions of eyewitness accounts throughout human existence. And that, at the very least, is a surefire glimpse into a message from beyond the grave that reads, "We still exist." Until next time.